Perception. How would you perceive me if I came up here, everything scattered, and just didn't seem like I knew what I was doing, didn't have anything prepared? Would you start to tone me out because you're not thinking I paid attention, did anything? How about if I came up here and over the last week got a tattoo, earring, shorts, and everything? Would I be perceived differently as a person, or would we look more on the inside? That's something I'd like to talk about this evening. My lesson is actually a bit more of a combination of different lessons I've done in the past, which were more shortened versions of when I kind of first started to do a bit of preaching. And it's funny how when you're younger, you tend to kind of be able to be a little more outgoing, at least for me. When I did the lesson specifically about, you know, perception, I came to the front. Fortunately, it was a home church. It was just my family and two other families. And I had fake earrings, shorts, and everything, you know, to kind of show that. And I feel like as you get older, you tend to kind of simmer down a little bit more. So, you know, that's why I'm not quite doing that now. Perception is the organization, identification, and interpretation of sensory information in order to represent and understand the environment. Let me read that again so you can kind of try and catch it. Perception is the organization, identification, and interpretation of sensory information in order to represent and understand the environment. This is actually a Wikipedia definition. When I looked up definitions for that in dictionaries, it was kind of tough to really understand it, so I felt like this kind of helped truly understand it, even though it also is a little wordy. Each person can perceive something completely different from each other. You know, what I see in one person can be completely different than what someone else sees in a person. What I see in time is can be completely different than what someone else sees in time of how much we have, how much we don't have. What we see, when one person sees in money, it can be completely different than what someone else sees in money of whether they consider having enough, a lot, or barely enough to live. So why would I talk about a subject like this? The way we perceive things in our everyday lives is going to change the way we walk with God. How we look at each other, how we connect with each other and see each other in our looking or thinking kind of changes the way we walk our life with God. And, well, in a lot of those things, we also have a bit of instruction in the Word of how we are to perceive people and what we're to do and things like that. So kind of those three things that I mentioned, time, money, and people, those are the three different subjects that I kind of want to focus in on just a little bit. So starting off with time, how often do we say or hear people say, I don't have enough time, or I didn't have enough time? Why do we always worry about what the time is, how much time we have? Us as humans, we tend to just be a bit more time sensitive, you know, or I guess it's really more of a cultural thing too, because, you know, we've also often heard of other cultures to where they don't see time in the same way that we do, where their meeting time is, well, when they kind of get all together, and it might not be at a particular time. However, we kind of run our lives a bit more on, you know, well, we get here at 5 o'clock, that's when we start, you know, we finish up at 6-ish, that's just kind of the way we do, you know, and that's just, as humans, we just kind of do that. But why do we worry about time in certain things, you know, especially when it comes to in worshiping God or studying His Word or, you know, wanting to be more Christ-like? Is it always a good idea to pay attention to time? So, kind of with that said, when we have an hour-long Bible study, are we constantly checking our watch It's been an hour. It's been an hour. I mean, here we have our bell. So 5 minutes warning, and then the bell rings. That's the time. If we don't have that, how much are we paying attention to that and then not focusing on what's most important, of what the message is, what we're studying, those kind of things? And then if we're not focusing as much on time, how much time do we focus then on God? Honestly and truly, especially with spending time with God, is something I personally need to work on most. And as Christians, we always have things that we need to work on a lot. And, if we're not so focused on, how much time we have on certain things, how much time, all of that, we can focus more on God and spend our time with God more, time in prayer, time in study with Him or in discussion. When we're having fun, we tend to not want to stop. Generally, if we don't have to focus on time, we only stop if we're tired or just kind of get bored or, someone gets hurt. Anything like that. It's generally, we don't tend to focus on time that much. If you're in a really good conversation, gets to 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, you don't want to stop the conversation because you're having such a good time. If we focus more of that on our lives with God, we can enrich ourselves more. So let's dive into the scriptures and let's look in Ephesians chapter 5. Positive thing of doing a lesson in a previous place and then doing it again is you get more information of what you spoke on. And a brother actually brought this verse up to me and suggested to kind of keep this in the lesson for future. So I have. Ephesians chapter 5, looking at verses 15 and 16. It says, "Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because," why? "The days are evil." Okay. So we're wanting to make the best use of our time. That's what it says. Make the best use of our time. Are we making the best use of our time? For each person, it's different. It's all based on how you, again, perceive it. Let's go to Acts chapter 20. Very popular, especially if anyone ever talks about time, this verse always comes up, so we kind of can't avoid it. Acts chapter 20, really just verse 7. It says, "On the first day of the week, when we were gathered together to break bread, Paul talked with them," other version says preached, "intending to depart on the next day, and he prolonged his speech until midnight." There's always that discussion, well, when did they start? We don't know. They may have started at 10 in the evening. They may have started at 4 in the afternoon. We don't know. That's not what the point is. The point was that he spoke with them a long time. Whether it was in a preaching format or whether it was in more of a discussion type format, that wasn't the important part. It was about being there and speaking with Paul. What is time? A non-spatial continuum in which events occur in apparently irreversible succession from the past through the present to the future. So, kind of a bit of a definition type thing again. The actual definition of time would be just more about, what you heard me saying, that was the past. What you hear me saying right now, that's the present. What you're going to hear me say, that's the future. That's what time essentially is. It's that continuum. However, we also then just use time in all sorts of other ways in indicating of what we're doing and when we're doing and all of that. So, basically something that we use to measure from one period of time to another. Let's go to 2 Peter chapter 3. Looking at verse 8, 2 Peter 3, verse 8. But do not overlook this one fact, beloved, that with the Lord, one day is 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day. We can always take this as different meanings, but you know, one of the focus with this part, talking about God will be coming and as a thief in the night, we don't know when it will happen. That's not the point. The point is being ready at all times. And I kind of take this a bit more as God's not quite worried about the exact timing. And then, you know, again, as with anyone, if ever anyone thinks an opinion is incorrect, always approach them. Approach me if you think I'm wrong. That I feel that God doesn't feel that time is important in this. What's important is that we're ready. God himself has stopped time. Let's go back into Joshua in the Old Testament, where we have that popular story of God stopping time. And of course, in the way it's worded, it's not quite God stopped time, but we'll see that. In Joshua chapter 10, we're going to look in verses 12 through 14. Joshua 10, 12 through 14. At that time, Joshua spoke to the Lord in the day when the Lord gave the Amorites over to the sons of Israel. And he said in the sight of Israel, Sun, stand still at Gibeon, and moon in the valley of Aijalon. And the sun stood still, and the moon stopped, until the nation took vengeance on their enemies. Is this not written in the book of Jashar? The sun stopped in the midst of heaven and did not hurry to set for about a whole day. There has been no day like it before or since, when the Lord heeded the voice of a man, for the Lord fought for Israel. So, as it says, the sun stayed still, which we know now the sun doesn't actually stay still, the earth quit turning. It was that way for an entire day. God is able to have the power to stop what we understand as time, because we use our time also based on what we have outside. When it's bright outside, more than likely it's, you know, morning time, afternoon. It's not going to be the nighttime. Let's look in Luke. We've got a couple passages there. Luke chapter 12. Luke 12, let's look at verses 36 through 40. Luke 12, 36 through 40. And be like men who are waiting for their masters to come home from the wedding feast, so that they may open the door to him at once when he comes and knocks. Blessed are those servants whom the master finds awake when he comes. Truly, I say to you, he will dress himself for service and have them recline at table, and he will come and serve them. If he comes in the second watch or in the third and finds them awake, blessed are those servants. But know this, that if the master of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he would not have left the house to be broken into. You also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. God tells us that we don't know when he will come back. So we need to be ready no matter what. And I use that as, you know, our time on earth is limited. Whether we're going to live out our lives complete in the sense of where we die, or whether we're going to live our lives up to the point when Jesus comes back, we do not know. What's important is that we take our time that we have and focus that on the Lord. Let's go back to Luke, the second chapter of Luke. Second chapter of Luke, starting in verse 43, going to verse 49. And why is this granted to me, the mother of my Lord, should come to me? Excuse me. Let me get to the right chapter. Here we go. Luke 2, 43. And when the feast was ended, as they were returning, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem. His parents did not know it, but supposing him to be in the group, they went a day's journey. But then they began to search for him, among their relatives and acquaintances. And when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem, searching for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. And when his parents saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us so? Behold, your father and I have been searching for you in great distress." And he said to them, "Why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?" He was there for a few days without his parents. Parents didn't know. They went a day's journey, came back looking for him. He wasn't worried about how much time he was away from his parents. Jesus was doing the work of his father. Let's go to Matthew chapter 26. Matthew chapter 26, we look in verse 40 and 41. Chapter 26, 40 and 41. And he came to his disciples and found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, "So could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." Is our flesh weak? Do we want to serve the Lord in the way we want, but our flesh is making us fall asleep? Where we cannot wait, that we cannot do what we need to do. God is the most important thing to any of us in this world. So we really should be more worried about doing His will rather than spending more time in anything else. Now, of course, obviously I'm not saying that we should need to focus everything on the Lord, because we have our other things. We have our families to take care of. We need to do what we need to do to live on this earth. But we want to spend as much time as we can to focus that on God. So when it comes to God, we should not worry about how much time we're using to spend with Him or in His Word or in worship to Him. Perception of money. Another big thing. I don't have enough money. Everyone's pretty much said it. We've all heard it. This one's harder to work with because we don't have an endless supply of money like we do with time. With time, we have so much of it. With money, we don't quite. But what's important is we use what we have for the good of others and for God. So how do we perceive our money? Do we see it where we make sure we use what we have for what's going to help us in life, and then what's left over, we'll try and help others. You know, we'll try and give. Or are we looking to give back to God, help others, whether as strangers or each other, and then have the rest for ourselves? You know, and again, it's the whole, we want to make sure that we use our money to keep the roof on our heads, to keep food on our tables. It's what's beyond that. What do we do beyond that? It would depend, actually, before I get to that, Ephesians chapter 4, another wonderful addition to this. Ephesians chapter 4, and we're going to look at verse 28. "Let the thief no longer steal, but rather let him labor, doing honest work with his hands." Why? "So that he may have something to share with anyone in need." It would depend on what we say of why we don't have enough money. Do we say we don't have enough money because we're giving most of that to the Lord? Let's look in Mark chapter 12. Mark chapter 12, and we'll look in verses 41 through 44. And he sat down opposite the treasury and watched the people putting money into the offering box. Many rich people put in large sums, and a poor widow came and put in two small copper coins, which make a penny. And he called his disciples to him and said, "Truly, I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all of those who are contributing to the offering box, for they have contributed out of their abundance. But she, out of her poverty, has put in everything she had, all she had to live on." So are we giving, not having enough money because we're giving it to the Lord? Do we not have enough money because we're helping others? Let's look in Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12, we're going to look in verse 13. Romans 12, 13. "Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality." Very simple, but direct. Or do we not have enough money, or do we say we don't have enough money because we're helping a stranger? Let's go into Hebrews chapter 13. Hebrews 13, look in just verse 2. "Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares." Or do we say we don't have enough money because we're spending it on entertainment? Don't have a verse on that. That's not there. Or do we say we don't have enough money because we're just spending it all our wants? We want this, we want that, we want a better car, we want a better house, we want. If we perceive that we don't have enough money to do good for the Lord, we need to get our priorities straight. People, the perception of people, of each other, of those around us, often you've heard or have possibly even said, "That person is weird. That person is creepy." Oftentimes, there are those type of people where we do perceive that they seem weird, they seem creepy. However, how do we then take that? Do we take it, well, this weird person, this creepy person, we need to stay away from them forever? Or do we try and work with them and see the inside of them? We often make a decision on what kind of a person someone is based on their appearance. Unfortunately, it's a bit of human nature. We just tend to do that. However, we're told not to show partiality. So we know where we're going next. James chapter 2. Go to James chapter 2. We're going to look in the first five verses. "My brothers, show no partiality as you hold the faith in our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory. For if a man wearing a gold ring and fine clothing comes into your assembly, and a poor man in shabby clothing also comes in, and if you pay attention to the one who wears the fine clothing and say, 'You sit here in a good place,' and say to the poor man, 'You stand over there,' or 'Sit down at my feet,' have you not then made distinctions among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts? Listen, my beloved brethren, has not God chosen those who are poor in the world to be rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom, which he has promised to those who love him?" Worked at Staples for a little bit, and one of the managers often, you know, was huge on sales, you know, get the sale of the warranty. And You know, at one point we talked about how people dress and when, you know, when they come in. And, you know, of course, like in sales, you tend to kind of stay away from the person that seems like they don't have enough money. You want to go to the person that seems like they do. And he talked about how a guy one time came in farm clothes and boots, completely dirty and everything, and ended up being like one of his best customers because he had a really well put together operation for your farm. In the same way in our lives, when we see someone, we don't know what's on the inside. We don't know if a person that appears to be someone that is going to reject God will actually reject God. Let's go into 1 Samuel chapter 16. Look at what the Lord said to Samuel on how not to look at the outward appearance when choosing a king. 1 Samuel chapter 16. And we are going to look in verse 7. But the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not look on his appearance or in the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as the man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart." And that is obviously talking about the oldest son of Eli's when he's picking out a king. He was told, don't look at the outward appearance. That's not what we're looking for. We're looking at the inside. We're looking at the heart. And who was picked? The smallest of them all. The one the father didn't even bring up because it's like, he's not a choice. He's tending the sheep. But he's the one that's picked because it's about the inward. It's about the heart, not the outward appearance. You never truly know a person until we actually take some time and get to know them. We may not be allowed to treat people differently based on the outward appearance. However, we do have to think about the times when we need to watch out for the false teachers. So I want to read in Matthew chapter 7 real quick on that. Because, yes, someone may have the perfect outward appearance, but not have the right heart. Matthew 7, verse 15. "Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves." They appear to be one of the sheep, one of the flock, but they just have the sheep's clothing on top of them and look to disrupt everyone else, look to have incorrect teachings and to lead others the wrong way. So we always have to be careful then also, those that may appear good may not be good. We have a few orchard people that know apples may look great on the outside, but on the inside, not so good. When we perceive certain things in our lives, we need to make sure and be careful that we're doing based on what the Word tells us. We're not doing just based on what our mind tells us, what the Word tells us. Having a certain kind of a perception can be sinful. And so that is another thing we always want to do. Watch out. We need to watch out how we see things in all aspects of our lives, because there's always that possibility that we're looking at things wrong and it can be sinful, and we need to be careful on that. Another big thing is that when we perceive life positively, we tend to have less stress. So true. I can attest to that. With the pizza shop, there have been so many ups and downs, and honestly, my stress levels had gone up so much more when I just saw things more on the negative side and not looking to the positive things, and it can just hurt us as a person. So we also want to watch out not just for our spiritual health, we also want to think about it for our physical health. So make sure that we all perceive things in the good way, and are willing to do good for others, and always, always willing to serve the Lord. So, as always, if anyone feels that they have done wrong and feel that through their lives have perception has taken them over, taken you over, and have it where you're perceiving life wrong and feel like you need to turn around and look at things better, or if you want to change your perception of life completely and coming to the Lord for the first time, we always have that time available and offer that to you while we stand and sing the song of invitation.